Hey everybody, Rob Mauer here, and today we're going to be talking about Tesla's sales in August in China. We've got a comment on this from a CPCA official, so we'll talk about what that means, maybe for production as well. We've also got news on Tesla in Canada, an updated price target from Piper Sandler. They have upped their Tesla price target, and a few other items as well. Start off here with the stock. Tesla today, kind of a strange day. Pretty significant dip during mid-morning and afternoon, but Tesla recovering in the afternoon, finishing up 0.6% to close at $277.16, while the NASDAQ was down 0.25% on the day. So I think we had 5 red days in a row there for Tesla, but narrowly edging out or avoiding that sixth. So nice to see that for today. So let's hop into the China sales news here first. So as we've been talking about, this should be a pretty big month for Tesla as finally, the upgrades have been completed for Model Y, and then in early August, we did have some downtime for the Model 3, but those upgrades have been completed as well. So keep that in mind with this number. It does include a little bit of Model 3 downtime, but should be seeing the full strength of Model Y and partial full strength for the Model 3. So CNEV post covering this here. Tesla's sales in China in August, so we're talking wholesale sales here, which would be a mix of retail and export, are expected to reach 77,000 units, according to China Passenger Car Association official saying this today. So sometimes they'll give us a little bit of a hint in terms of what the numbers are going to come in on, going to come in at. In about a week or so, a little bit over a week, we should get the official numbers. Hopefully that will include production as well. But here we're just talking retail sales and export. So we'll talk a little bit, we'll put more context on that in a second. But the other comment that was made was that production is strong after the end of July, although it did encounter Tesla did encounter brief pressure on parts supply. So whether that's due to the Sichuan power shortages and some of the supply chain challenges that may have caused or other reasons, it does look like maybe there was a little bit of interruption there during the month for Tesla. So let's look at this in context. If we do have Tesla's wholesale sales at about 77,000, what's most important to keep in mind here when we're talking about what production might come in at, which is, again, what we care about most, we need to remember that in July, Tesla produced about 10,000 more vehicles than they delivered, so about 10,500 more. That's a significant amount of inventory of inventory for Tesla to bring into August versus usually we see them, you know, fluctuating somewhere between positive 5,000, negative 5,000. This was actually the most that Tesla's ever overproduced by in any given month. So what that means is the 77,000 vehicles, it's got that tailwind of 10,000 vehicles sitting there that Tesla's produced, ready to be sold, whether that's getting on a boat and being exported or being sold there domestically in China. So when we come into August, usually in this middle month, we're tending to see inventory a little bit closer, or rather production a little bit closer to what sales end up being. You can see that the biggest variance there is probably 4,000 vehicles, but usually it's 1 to 2,000. So I think when we're looking at the production number here, we'd probably expect it to be, you know, somewhere in between 75 and 79,000, just very loosely based off of what we're seeing here from this wholesale sales number. Remember, there could be a little bit of a range here on this wholesale sales number too. They're just saying it's estimated to come in at that. And we could see any, you know, even up to a 5,000 vehicle variance on that. So 72 to 80, you know, 81-ish, 82 wouldn't be completely out of the ballpark for production, but most likely a little bit closer into that 77,000 number. If we look at Tesla's historical production, that's going to be a record. Pretty much anywhere in that range is going to be a record. We saw the previous record happen in June at 71,000. So even with a little bit of downtime there for the Model 3 at the beginning of the month, Tesla should be able to, based on these numbers, be setting a production record in August. And then hopefully going into September here, smooth sailing, we'll see a little bit more on that in a second, but hopefully smooth sailing in September and Tesla can kind of, you know, demolish that record. If you've been following along with my forecast at all on ShareLoft, this is pretty close to what I've been forecasting the most of this quarter. It's probably a little bit low. I think I was at about 81,000 for production for August. So, you know, it's a little bit in that range. It's possible, but probably a little bit higher. I'm probably going to update my forecast a little bit for Berlin and Texas, maybe increase those a little bit. So shouldn't be any, you know, huge changes on that, but I'll update those officially when we do get the final numbers from the CPCA. So hopefully that puts that in context. Again, production most important, but, you know, tracking pretty well, record production kind of as expected by us, maybe not by people that are following the company a little bit less closely, but good to see Tesla, you know, definitely ramping up after those production upgrades have happened, and that ties in nicely with what we had talked about yesterday with wait times starting to come down as well. The other thing that I mentioned, so just, you know, in terms of China and smooth sailing, we may not have the most smooth sailing because it looks like there are some lockdowns in Chengdu, which is in Sichuan. So just can't really catch a break there, but it looks like they have gone into a lockdown for COVID-related reasons. However, it does sound like there will still be continued manufacturing and things like that if those manufacturers are set up for a closed-loop type of situation, which is obviously what Shanghai ended up going to when these lockdowns were happening in Shanghai. So hopefully not anything too major, but of course this can escalate over time. But hopefully this will just kind of, you know, run its course and get back to more normalcy without any more restrictive lockdowns. Looks like they're just going to be launching more extensive testing for about 4 days. So something just to continue to follow, I guess, over this weekend. All right, so moving on from China, we've got an update here on Canada as well. So Electric Autonomy reporting on this. They had previously reported on Tesla lobbying the Canadian government to make things a little bit more competitive in manufacturing in Canada. And Tesla is required to disclose their lobbying, so it sounds like they have kind of updated what they are specifically lobbying about, this time to include facilitating, facilitating engagement with the government to convince them to adjust permitting timelines to increase the competitiveness of Canada. So kind of like exactly what we talked about yesterday with Ford and Rivian saying to do that in the United States for mining. We're seeing Tesla here pushing for something similar in Canada, not necessarily as specific on mining, but just manufacturing in general. So that could mean a lot of things. It could be for Tesla trying to advocate for its suppliers. It could be Tesla trying to advocate on its own behalf for something as significant as a gigafactory, or kind of anywhere in between. Maybe Tesla wants to set up some of their own supply chain there too. So, you know, it really could mean anything, but it sounds like there are hints that Tesla is working on something with Canada. One of their ministers, Minister Champagne, had said that in an interview with Electric Autonomy that relations with Tesla are ramping up. So again, don't really necessarily know what this means, but there's been, I guess, even kind of since the shareholder meeting, more of these whispers or rumors about some potential partnership or interest from Tesla's behalf kind of heating up with Canada. So it'll be interesting to follow that. And then Alex Oha on Twitter today also noticed that Tesla has posted a recruiting position, job listing, for Quebec. And it says here that they are looking for someone that is a high-volume recruiter. Tesla's looking for a high-volume, extraordinary recruiter that stands out doing all of these recruiting tasks. So high-volume would seem to also fit very well with something like a factory. Again, doesn't necessarily mean that, but interesting to see these things kind of heating up with Canada. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that there. As for that price target I mentioned, so Piper Sandler, Alex Potter out with a new note today. Interestingly, not about the Giga Berlin tour. We've been seeing a lot of those, but we do have this update here. Potter has increased his price target from $344 before, now to $360. That'd be $1,080 pre-split, if you're still kind of thinking in that mindset. But $360 post-split. What's kind of interesting here is that Potter has increased his weighted average cost of capital. Usually we see analysts do that, and that gives them a decent reason to lower their price target, which that's just how the math works out if you're increasing your average cost of capital. But even with that increase, Potter is still increasing his price target here. This note is very relevant to what we had talked about yesterday with wait times coming down. I'll show quickly just a visualization of what they're seeing here. Don't overreact to one vehicle. A lot of them are kind of holding steady here, but maybe a little bit of a downtrend in recent months in average wait times. This here is Model 3. And then for Model Y, you can kind of see a similar thing, especially here on the long-range Model Y in the United States. And then again, in the last month or so, down elsewhere as well. So he's saying, okay, looking at those wait times, investors are starting to think about the question of demand. I think that a lot of the Inflation Reduction Act stuff should be alleviating that, but of course you have to consider Europe and China as well. And anytime these wait times start to decline, you know, these questions pop up. So Potter is basically saying Tesla is striving for higher production. They want shorter wait times and they want to lower prices. Elon has been extremely clear about this. He's gone as far as saying that their pricing is embarrassing. So Potter is saying, hey, this is what Tesla wants. They're aggressively pursuing market share as they aggressively ramp up production. So this should be what everybody is hoping for from an investment perspective, because that's how Tesla gets to where it needs to be long term. And that's what's happening. So they say that, you know, Piper Sandler says that we are unconcerned. Faster production equates to shorter wait times. Eventually, Tesla may cut price in order to refill the backlog. But if so, this would be intentional and an offensive decision. So completely agree with that. He says China risk is real, but is growing less worrisome. Basically just talking about how there's been, you know, all these disruptions with Shanghai that we've covered in great detail that's affected Tesla's market share, if you look at it that way, which we never really do because it's not something that I really care about. But basically saying now that production's going up, market share should go up as well. So boosting their price target, even though they increased their weighted average cost of capital by 0.2% or 20 basis points, and they also lowered their 2023 revenue estimates. They think that the increasing price in full self-driving has an outsized impact on their earnings forecast. So I guess they're expecting improvements in the functionality that would drive or maintain the take rate of FSD and allow that additional $3,000 to kind of fall to the bottom line, which is increasing their net income forecast, presumably, and driving that higher price target. So on the FSD thing, I don't know that I would necessarily fully agree with that. It really depends on how much value Tesla's able to provide from that feature. And if the price increase ends up being warranted. So I guess hopefully we'll learn more about that tomorrow. Hoping to do an FSD drive of FSD beta 10.69.1 if we do have a slower news day. So that is the price target increase from Alex Potter. Always nice to see his notes. Next up, we've got kind of a story that's been developing over the last couple of days. We haven't covered it yet, I guess a few months now, but over the last couple of days, more attention. Lawmakers in California have passed a bill in the Senate that sort of takes aim at marketing of autonomous driving features. So a lot of articles, you know, saying that this is going to make Tesla's use of full self-driving illegal or something like that. Not necessarily the case. If we look at the actual bill text here, it doesn't say anything specifically about like full self-driving. It just says you can't name a feature in a way that would imply that the vehicle is fully autonomous. So that's, even if this is passed, which right now it is, still needs to be signed by Governor Newsom. If he does sign it, it doesn't necessarily mean that Tesla has to immediately go and change the name of full self-driving. So it's a risk, and this would make it, you know, something that probably will end up in court at some point, but doesn't necessarily mean that Tesla will have to change that name. We just saw a case like this happen in, I believe, Germany, where Tesla was, you know, it was ruled in Tesla's favor on appeal that Tesla did not have to change that name. So we could see something similar play out here in California, even with this new bill being passed. Still something to keep an eye on. You know, at the end of the day, it's a name. I think people fully understand it. Anyone that's, you know, the German court ruling or wherever that case was basically that, hey, if anyone is as far as on the Tesla purchase page, it's extremely clear what this feature is and what it is not from Tesla's communication. So they were fine with it because of those things. I tend to fully agree with that. No one that's in the process of purchasing a Tesla doesn't understand this. It's very clear. So we'll just have to see how that plays out. But in any case, it's just a name. And if Tesla needs to change it, they can change it. I don't think that will really change anything about the business. So we'll see. All right, next up here, we've got a report from Drive Tesla Canada. This is off of a tweet by Chris Zong, who we have previously mentioned. A little bit hit or miss with information. I wasn't a fan of how they had communicated some reporting on China sales previously. But anyway, they are reporting on Twitter that Tesla in 2023 will shift the Model Y and Model 3 to the stockless form that the Model S and Model X currently have. So using the blinkers with the touch buttons, the haptic feedback buttons on the steering wheel, and same thing with the sliding gear shift that you control with the touchscreen. So saying that that will happen with the 2023 models. So Drive Tesla Canada here, who I have pretty good respect for their information, they said that they've reached out to some sources, and according to what they were told, Tesla is going to make the switch. They were not given a timeline, just saying that that would happen after their contract with the current supplier ends. So I know people are going to have different feelings about that. Personally, I probably prefer the stock. I've only spent, I don't know, 15 minutes driving the other version, and I think it's fine. And I assume you get used to it more over time. But definitely an improvement in terms of the production process and an improvement in terms of the cost. So I would assume that that's Tesla's primary motivation there. But you know, assuming that people just kind of get used to it, which again, I think probably happens. But I know there will be strong feelings like that, like there always are, like the Alcantara headliner, the lumbar support for passengers. People always have pretty strong feelings about those things. From a business perspective, I think it's probably not going to make much of a difference. And then here we've got an update. We talked yesterday about how Tesla had made their first deliveries. I think, were we talking Singapore? I think we were talking about Singapore. They have also just arrived in Japan, model-wise. I'm not sure if Tesla's actually made any official deliveries yet, but it sounds like that will be happening very shortly in Japan as well. So always good to see that market expansion. Also, something we talked about yesterday, that AXA insurance, I'm not even going to really call it a test, but whatever they were doing with the Model S there, they have now issued a statement of apology. They say that they regret that the 2022 edition of the crash test may have conveyed a bad impression of electromobility or created misunderstandings about it. They go on just to talk about why they're even testing in the first place, what their purpose of their tests are, which doesn't really make any sense because they are basically saying that they're trying to learn things from these tests, which you're not going to learn anything from putting fireworks in cars, in my opinion, but nevertheless, that was their justification, trying to learn things. They say that their statistics show that compared to drivers of traditional combustion vehicles, owners of electric cars are responsible for 50% more collisions causing damage to their own vehicle. They also show that drivers of powerful electric vehicles are more likely to cause damage to their own vehicle or to third-party vehicles. So kind of interesting, definitely doesn't fit with the statistics that we have from Tesla on crashes. I don't know if maybe other electric cars are driving this up. It'd be nice if they would publish these statistics. Maybe they have somewhere else, but I certainly have not seen those. But it's a little bit surprising. Tesla may be able to mitigate that more than other electric vehicles are with things we've talked about, like pedal misapplication management, where Tesla is saying they're preventing like 40 misuses of those per day. So, you know, maybe that's just a bigger problem for other electric vehicles, and maybe that's what they're talking about, or maybe Tesla's included in that data. It would seem unlikely from Tesla's own published data, but you never know. Anyway, they continue on to say that unfortunately they found in the aftermath that the test and the communication could mislead the public. I think you could have known that ahead of time. They should have explicitly mentioned this fact in the communication following the test, in particular in the press release and the images provided. I would say so. We regret any misunderstandings caused and apologize. So that is their statement of regret there. Moving on from that, we've got an update on Volkswagen. So Herbert Diess is now officially no longer the CEO. Been replaced by, I think, Oliver Blume. Yeah. So Handelsblatt today reporting that Volkswagen has internally kind of conceded that they're not going to hit their CARIAD or CARIAD. Can't remember how to pronounce it. Their software target, basically developing 60% of their operating system was their target. It sounds like they've reduced or sort of given up on that goal. Now they're going to be partnering more and relying more on Bosch and Continental to step up and fill some of that gap where Volkswagen hasn't been able to accomplish what they want to accomplish with software. So that was kind of the thing that was hanging over Diess, even more so than, you know, I guess probably the biggest thing that was hanging over Diess, even more than his outward comments about Tesla and things like that. I'm sure that didn't help his case, but in terms of when this decision was made, that was kind of where the blame was placed, was the handling of software. So Volkswagen now using this opportunity to kind of like step back from that path. I think ultimately they need to be at a place where they're doing their own software, and they're not going to get there. I don't know if they were going to get there before. Maybe this buys them more time, but you know, tough situation for Volkswagen, I think, regardless of the direction that they choose on that. All right, last item for today, Cruise did issue a voluntary recall. So this has been published with NHTSA. A lot of people, you know, kind of poking fun at Cruise on this today. I get it. I don't want to, you know, poke too much fun at them, though, because this is something that, you know, we're going to have to go through to get to autonomous driving. Like, these vehicles are going to crash. It's going to happen. So we should hold our tongues a little bit on things like that, I think. Anyway, some interesting details in here. So this is basically in response to that Cruise crash where a Cruise vehicle was going through an unprotected left, a vehicle coming the other way in the intersection ended up hitting them. That vehicle was speeding, going like 40 or 45 in a 25 mile per hour zone. And Cruise vehicle did not complete the left turn, stopped in the intersection and got hit. So anyway, interesting details in here. First, they highlight that the number of vehicles is 80 So I don't know if that has been disclosed, new information to me. So possibly for others as well, probably over highlighted here, but basically they say that when they were performing that, those left-handed turns, they could on occasion, the reflexive planner could do a hard braking event to avoid a predicted route from another vehicle that ends up being incorrect. So basically what happened here, they say that only one such incident has occurred in over 123,560. Not sure why they specify over on that since it's so specific, but over 123,500 vehicles or 500 turns, driverless unprotected left turns performed prior to this software release. They had paused those since that accident, so they weren't doing unprotected lefts for quite some period of time. Now that they've issued this updated software, they have resumed that. Basically, they talk about how this crash happened, saying the oncoming vehicle was going well above the speed limit. It was in a right turn lane slash bus lane, and then it veered back out of it. So that's why the cruise vehicle thought that it was turning. It stopped because it thought that it would be turning into it, but then the vehicle continued going straight. So that's basically what happened. They did say that the police report did find that the party most at fault for the collision was the other vehicle. So again, that's why I say like we shouldn't be jumping too all over this, because, you know, dangerous maneuver from the other vehicle too. And I think it's easy to compare and say like, oh, Tesla's got 35 million miles of FSD beta driving, but it's extremely different when you have someone there in the vehicle that can just press the accelerator and get out of a situation like this. So I don't particularly like comparisons like that either. Not trying to defend Cruise, because I think Tesla's, you know, well ahead in terms of where the strategy is, and I'm not sure that Cruise will get there, but there are other ways to critique in a more fair manner, I think. So those are my thoughts on that. And that'll really wrap it up for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, September 2nd episode, hopefully an FSD episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.